Hi, everyone. Welcome to American Truth Finders. I'm Neil Douglas, and I am your host for the show. And I tell you this every week, but it's always true. We have another great show lined up for tonight. And I'll tell you what, we've got a great guest. He's been on before. Our topic tonight is how unjust is the justice system? And my guest is Kenneth Abraham. And he is the founder and president of Citizens for Criminal Justice. Ken, good evening to you.
Hi, good evening to everybody out there.
I'm certainly so glad that you were wanting to do the show tonight, because there's so much we have to cover. I mean, there's so much stuff that really needs to be handled and talked about, and you know, whatever we can do about it, we have to do it. So, Ken, I tell you what, I want you to give your website and your, and if you want to give your Facebook site, that's fine too. Give the little people a little bit of background about yourself.
Okay. Okay. Put me in touch, folks. I'd appreciate it. Grab a pen and paper. You should make a note of our website, because there is a ton of useful information on there. I'll give you that in just a minute. I hope you'll get a pencil and paper. My name is Ken Abraham. I have been immersed in virtually any criminal justice issue you can talk about for the last 8 years. I'm a former prosecutor, defense attorney, business owner, entrepreneur, teacher, a prisoner, drug addict, homeless person. I left out one or two things, but that pretty much covers it. Basically, I lost everything to cocaine about 8 years ago. You can't pay me enough to touch that poison today. And when I saw what goes on, and I can't say I shouldn't have gone to prison. It's worse than that. I still get choked up thinking about what I did. Worse than the drugs, I stole money to buy more. So I went to prison. I should have been out in 1 year. And thanks to the totally outrageous criminal illegal conduct of some COs, who, when they found out I was trying to get some of their buddies arrested, as they need to be, and had filed one lawsuit, they succeeded in keeping me in there for 5 years, four of it in an isolation cell. So I got a good look at what goes on in there, and that's what got me started on everything I'm doing today. In a nutshell, and just as bad as what goes on in the prisons, and I hope to touch on that a little later, is the massive indifference to it by the officials who can correct the problem. And I'm talking about federal prosecutors, primarily state prosecutors and judges. They've got their heads in the sand. And I've written an essay on why prison abuse is bad, bad policy, but we'll come to that. Okay. Please make a note of our website. It's www.citizensforcriminaljustice.net. You will find a lot of good, interesting articles on there and useful tips. You can join our Facebook group page. That's Citizens for Criminal Justice with the word justice all in caps. My email address is Ken Abraham, KenAbraham, 3138 at gmail.com. My phone number is 302-423-4067. There's no such thing as a stupid question. By the way, I hope you'll go on our Facebook group page and let us know what you think about this broadcast when we're done. That's Citizens for Criminal Justice with justice all in caps. Okay, question is, how unjust is our criminal justice system? Wow. Perhaps the most, I'll tell you how unjust, it is wildly, profoundly unjust. Not just to the hundreds of thousands of individual people who have been treated unfairly by it over the last 40 years, but to the whole black race. Millions, and I don't exaggerate when I say millions, of our black citizens have been clobbered by the system in the last 40 years. We'll come back to some of the racial aspects of it in a moment. Perhaps the most vivid indication of how out of control and dysfunctional the system is the rate at which we are convicting innocent people. You know, I was a prosecutor for 5 years, and I made dang sure that I never convicted an innocent person. Well, my job was to do justice, plain and simple, to be fair. You do the crime, you do the time, a reasonable amount of time. If I ever had any doubt that anybody did the offense that came before me, I dropped the charges. I could do that. Today, we are seeing the exoneration of innocent people at the rate of about three a week, a little over three every week. Now, mind you, these are only the ones where the scientific evidence proves irrefutably. I'm talking about DNA. There's no arguing about it. 100% crystal clear, they're innocent. They didn't do the crime, yet they're in prison. So imagine how many more thousands of people are innocent people are in prison, incarcerated. It's the worst thing you can do as a prosecutor. It's the worst thing the system can do to anybody is to incarcerate an innocent person, convict them, give them the criminal record, and then lock them up for 10, 20, 30 years or more. How many have we killed, I wonder, with the death penalty? One estimate, the estimates are all over the place as to how many innocent people actually have been convicted over the last 40 years or so, from 10,000 to 100,000. God only knows the real answer. But it's wildly out of control. Let's look at race for a minute. I've got all you have to do is Google this stuff. You know, what percentage of prisoners are black, et cetera, et cetera. Just Google the right question. You can find anything on the computer. I'm an old fart, by the way. This internet stuff is all new to me, but there's just about nothing you can't find out here. And of course, I've read hundreds and hundreds of articles in the last. I've been free now for about almost 4 years, in 25 words or less, with my nonprofit, helping a lot of individuals and raising as much hell as legally possible about the criminal justice system. So I get scores of articles every week. I read tons of them. Post some of the best ones on our website, etc. Here are some facts. You know, I posted today, as a prelude to this, on our Facebook page, the Ferguson Report that came out not long ago by the U.S. Department of Justice after the outrageous killing of a fellow in Ferguson, Missouri. Mike Brown, I think, was the one in Ferguson, if I'm not mistaken. And the U.S. Department of Justice went in, did a couple of investigations. Well, their conclusions are quite damning. And by the way, their findings are not unique to Ferguson. These numbers are basically true all over America. You know, the good news is that the spotlight is finally on police abuse. We need the same sort of spotlight on prison abuse. However,
okay, I want to stop you on that for just a second, because what you just said is something that, you know, we've talked about. I've had guests on my show about the police brutality. And we're going to continue with that, Ken. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
that's okay.
I want people to have, just if you want to call in and ask Ken a question, the number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can actually message me on Facebook. And if you're kind of afraid to call on the phone, then don't worry about it. Just message me and I'll ask him the question. Anyway, Ken, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go right on ahead.
Yeah, quite all right. Okay. So then the Ferguson report, it was quite damning. You know, Eric Holder, the United States Attorney General at the time, gave the report, gave a video present summary of it. And he found that police in wholesale numbers routinely violate the rights of young black Americans primarily, and violate their Fourth Amendment rights in terms of seizures when they stop and search them for no reason whatsoever without any probable cause. It's just wholesale rampant violation of rights. You know, I'll interject at this point. If you read only one article on our website, I hope it'll be How the War on Drugs Has Destroyed Justice. There's not a problem in the system today that you can't mention that isn't caused by the war on drugs, directly or indirectly. It's the most cataclysmically, clearly failed, costly policy in American history. You know as well as I do, you can put me in any town in America, I can get wherever I want in 20 minutes. All we're doing is wasting billions of dollars, and the numbers are, depending what report you read, we spend from $52 to $70 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars on our prisons every year, about two-thirds of which is on the war on drugs. Two-thirds of that number is spent each year on the war on drugs. It's just
no rehab, right?
And yeah, that's right. And, you know, again, the good news is 4 years ago when I first started talking about this, which is the day I got out of prison, I went to some meetings where some of these politicians were, And they were laughing at some of the things I said, such as we need to end the war on drugs, we need to end these mandatory minimum sentences, et cetera, et cetera. Well, today, some of the same politicians are echoing my words, saying the same sorts of things. And one reason by that, for that is our vigorous campaign of letters to the editor. You know, it's great to post stuff on Facebook, but the people, the policymakers and decision makers, they don't read a lot of that stuff. They sure don't read petitions, but they read the newspapers, either online or in, you know, hard copy in their laps. And millions of people read these letters to the editor. So we have various letters ready to go on various topics. People send them out to newspapers across the country. The word is spreading. And the good news is people are finally, very slowly, starting to catch on. But boy, it took us 40 years to get into this mess. And I dare say, unfortunately, it's going to take about that long to get us out of it. But the war on drugs, look at it. Primarily, it's a war on drug addicts. And addiction, of course, should be treated as the health problem that it is. You mentioned treatment. There's a bill pending in the Delaware legislature. It's been there for about 3 years now. Two of us got all excited when some legislators said, oh, yeah, they're going to take it and run with it. They never did. It's the best thing that could happen to this state or any state in the foreseeable future. It's called the Delaware Crime Prevention and Rehabilitation Act. It's based on a law in California that's been working well for about 15 years. And what it does, for one quarter of the cost that we're now putting a person in prison, we can take that same person. First of all, it ends all mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent crimes. It directs all nonviolent drug offenders out of the court system into treatment programs. Same thing for the mentally ill. And not only are these centers there to treat people who had been arrested or otherwise would be in the system, it's for anybody to take advantage of it voluntarily. It would do this at one quarter of the cost of what we're currently wasting, locking people up, warehousing them, not giving them any treatment at all. And, of course, when we provide successful treatment programs, we reduce recidivism. They come out, they're going to commit less crimes. I mean, it's just common sense. So we save a fortune in the long run, not to mention the immediate costs. So that's still pending, kicking around. I'm not sure of the exact status of it today, whether it'll ever get enacted, who knows. There are various committees and commissions looking at the criminal justice reform. I just posted another item on our Facebook page today about 8 or 9 such meetings coming up in the foreseeable future. It's a lot of talk, though, and too little action. Our attorney general has finally called for the reduction in some mandatory minimum sentences and for more treatment programs. It's just common sense. It's what we need, because obviously what we have been doing is a total disaster. Let me
jump in. I just have a quick question. When you mention all these people that are sitting there in prison for nonviolent crimes, the money? Isn't it all about the money that these states and that are getting?
For every one person arrested, 29 people benefit financially. That was from a New York Times article a couple of years ago. I wish I had that site, but I don't. And think about it. The prisons, not only the COs, everybody affiliated with the prison, all the support programs, all the so-called treatment programs, the so-called education programs, the support staff, all the police, all their support staff, all the prosecutors, the judges, everybody involved in the system, the so-called healthcare people, 29 people, and maybe a handful of them are doing society any good. I mean, most of it is just a total joke, a total waste of resources, keeping people employed. It's outrageous. Those people could be better employed providing, you know, homes for the homeless, treatment programs, nursing homes for us old folks, you name it. Repairing our infrastructure, which is crumbling under our eyes, our bridges and roads, that's railroad tracks, that sort of thing. It's all about the money. And that's another reason change is so slow, by the way. Not only do private prisons, Corrections Corporation of America is the largest, they're the worst. All prisons are terrible. Terrible. And the neglect of serious medical needs is nothing short of outrageous. Just as outrageous as they're beating people to death for no reason. It's just outrageous. Corrections Corporation of America and the other big private prison, they spend millions, tens of millions of dollars lobbying legislators to keep these prisons going and to build more, and certainly not to shut them down or change any laws that would reduce prison populations. There are powerful economic forces opposing constructive change, including police unions and corrections officers unions. I mean, it's job security. Think about it. And that's another reason why they keep them going through the revolving door. You know, there's a total disconnect between enforcement, between punishment and enforcement and public safety. The probation officers, you know, you're 5 minutes late. If you get the wrong PO in the wrong mood and the wrong judge in the wrong mood or conscious of their financial vested interest, you're 5 minutes late for curfew, they'll violate your probation and lock you up. You're 5 minutes late for appointment with your PO, they can violate you and lock you up. You miss one, they'll violate you and lock you up. All kinds, innumerable reasons why they do that. Listen to this number. In round numbers, about 600, it's still true. I read this about 3 years ago, and it's still true. About 600,000 people enter our prisons every year. About two-thirds of them, about 400,000, are going back. They're going back for violating probation or violating parole or unable to pay costs and fines. That's another thing about our war on poor people. It's just, you know, to keep these people employed. It's not protecting society. It's not doing a damn bit of good. Two-thirds of the people being violated, by the way, are nonviolent offenders. Depending what study you read, the numbers are a little bit all over the place, but between 40 to 50% of all inmates, and maybe more, are nonviolent offenders. It's time to let them out. Let them out. Stop locking them up.
That's a high number, for crying out loud.
Sure it is. But it's a fact. Now, mind you, there are plenty of people in prison who should never get out. I'll be the first to say it. That's just downright dangerous. And that's what prisons should be for. But we've gotten carried away. We've built a whole prison industrial complex that has ruined America. And let's look at race for a moment. Okay, you know, although blacks constitute about 12% of the population, they're they're arrested at six times, depending on what study you read. I'm looking at something in front of me by the NAACP. Six times more likely to be arrested than whites. They constitute about, in Delaware, the population is about, hang on, got it written down here, about 13% 20% of the population, yet 60% of the prison population are blacks.
Racial profiling.
There's a commission in Delaware meeting across the state, four different places, coming up in the next month or so, taking a look at this. How it's called the Equal Access to Justice Commission, put together by our Chief Justice Leo Strine, taking a look at race in the system. Well, one thing they ought to study is the difference in sentences. One report I read pointed out that sentences are 13.7% or 14%, rounding it off, longer. Same person, same crime, similar background. 14% longer if you're black. You know, it may be conscious or unconscious racial bias. But the whole system is biased. The damn war on drugs is directed primarily against the young black man. And then that's one reason that's created all this hostility and the lack of cooperation with police and all the tension between communities and police that you see these days. You know, they obviously, after 40 years of getting stopped and frisked for no reason, thrown up against the hood of the police car, you know, people get a little sick and tired of it, and seeing their families destroyed by people getting locked up for having a joint in their pocket. I have some legislators to this day who try to tell me that nobody is getting locked up for marijuana these days. Balderdash. You pick up the newspaper any day, you can read two or three arrests at least for possession of marijuana. And so they're sitting in jail because they can't afford the bail, and some of them are getting sentenced to prison when they get convicted. The war on drugs is absolute nonsensical disaster.
It's all ludicrous, for crying out loud. I mean,
it's not accomplishing anything. It's wasting, not only is it wasting the money, billions of dollars, your hard-earned tax dollars. You know, we think about how we spend our money usually, except when it comes to paying taxes. Then we just send them the money, and we don't much care or hold them accountable for what they do with it. Well, we need to. But the worst toll, worse than the money, is the toll it's taken in terms of human tragedies. Millions of young black kids growing up without a parent because mom or dad is in prison for a drug offense. Some of them doing life for three drug offenses. Think about it.
Oh my gosh.
Just outrageous. It's the decimation of a whole population of American citizens. Let's look at a couple of numbers here. African Americans are about 1 million of the 2.3 million incarcerated in the prison population. This is from an NAACP study. It's about half, nearly half, although they're only, 13% of the general population. Together, African Americans and Hispanics comprise about 58% of all, that was 2008, 58% of all prisoners, although they're a fraction of that in the general population. It's clearly racist. And yet, I read a poll about a year ago that some study pointed out that about 74% of the public does not think the criminal justice system is racially biased. Right. Give me a break.
How many percent? Repeat that.
74, three quarters. If people don't know. That's why the purpose of my nonprofit, Citizens for Criminal Justice, is to help as many individuals as we can, and we do. I help a lot of guys personally over at the shelter in reentry. I answer phone calls and emails and letters from people from all over the country every day and questions and comments, et cetera, et cetera. The other purpose is to educate the public. People don't know. If people knew what really gets, look at that poll, 74%, three quarters of the American public does not think the criminal justice system is racially biased. You look at any figure in the system, and you can quickly see that that's just not true. It is crazily, unfairly, and unjustly biased. People need to get educated, not only on that, on what goes on in the prisons. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, doesn't the mainstream media and your newspapers, et cetera, have a lot to do with people not being aware of what's really going on?
Oh, yeah. They don't. Sure they do. And that's, if you talk about prison abuse, listen, it's wild, you know, the law should apply to everyone. Law, that's what, one of the strengths of this country, one of the aspects or facets of this nation that makes it revered and respected around the world. No one is above the law. Well, unless you're wearing a corrections uniform. It's just outrageous. And the newspapers, occasionally they'll print a letter to the editor about it. Rarely they'll print a story about it. And it's starting to change slowly. We're seeing people arrested in Florida, guards. A handful of the ones who need to be. But we have pockets of rampant crime in every state in the country, cesspools of crime, and I'm not talking about the prisoners, I'm talking about corrections officers. And the press, the public, the prosecutors and judges have their heads in the sand. Listen, I've seen, as you might imagine, when I was in prison, you know, once I found out I'm a lawyer, everybody wants to talk to me. So I saw thousands and thousands of inmates, lawsuits and cases and complaints, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm telling you, I have, and I read, by the way, that's why I learned all this stuff. I didn't know much about civil rights law or prison issues prior to 2007 when I got locked up. I only had two clients go to prison when I was practicing, and I got them both out, I'm happy to say. But, I mean, I knew it existed, but I'm telling you, I got a firsthand look at it. The judges, I'm talking about otherwise respectable, good judges. I know some of them. I know many lawyers who know many of them. Judges, otherwise decent people, good judges, they will ignore the law. They will misstate the facts to make these prisoner lawsuits go away. They do not want to acknowledge the problems in the prison because they are so huge and so enormous. If they did, I mean, it would be a national disgrace, and it is a national disgrace. Now, of course, anybody who's been in prison for any length of time, a month or more, knows exactly what I'm talking about. They steal property every day, whether it's inmate sneakers or radios or coffee. It's still theft. It's theft is theft. They steal property every day. They spray people. I'm talking about mace, and that stuff does hurt.
Right.
Pepper spray for no reason every day. They beat people to death. We have a couple of notorious cases in Delaware. I won't get into all that, but I'm telling you, and there are millions of people who know this. The problem is most of them are poor, uneducated, can't communicate well. They're not well connected. I mean, if this were happening to Joe Blow, the middle class white American sons and daughters, there'd be a public outcry, and federal prosecutors would start to lay down the law and prosecute them. By the way, that's the only remedy. That's the only effective possible remedy. Because even if a prisoner, and the cost is astronomical, these inmates filing these lawsuits, because there is no other recourse. So they file all these lawsuits in federal court. The cost of defending them is in the billions of dollars. The cost of the judges and the courts processing them, I mean, think about it. It's astronomical. And they don't. And one in the numbers are, in round numbers, about 1 in 1,000 prisoners who files a case gets past first base. That means the initial screening under the federal law that allows prisoners to sue for violation of their civil rights. Well, I'm not talking about the toast wasn't hot enough. I'm talking about deliberate indifference to serious medical needs, letting people die of horrible diseases, refusing to treat them, beating them savagely, brutally, physically, for no reason whatsoever, pepper spraying them, spitting in their food. It's all a violation of their rights. The cost is astronomical. About 1 in 1,000 makes it past the court's initial screening. About 1 in 1,000 get to trial. And about 1 in 1,000 of those ever wins. Now, even if they win, think about it. Let's say a prisoner has been grievously abused. He's miraculously fortunate to make it through the system by himself, because you can't find a lawyer to take 99.9999% of these cases. Occasionally, the ACLU will get involved, but good luck trying to find a lawyer. And the state, of course, has lawyers who specialize in making these cases go away. And the judges, as I've already said, I can't wait till my book hits the fan. It's still a long way from coming out, but I name names. I call one judge, Judge Idiot, and I just can't wait. And by the way, sue me for slander. Truth is a defense. So anyway, the fact is, let's say they win $200,000 for the harm done to them. The state pays that. It's a drop in the bucket. The guards aren't fired because the union rules make it so difficult to fire these damn people. They need to be prosecuted, so they pay no penalty as a practical matter. They need to be prosecuted by the feds. They need to be locked up and put on the side of the bars where they belong. It's the only effective remedy. You know, I knew a guy in prison. His nickname was Boo. I know his real name. I guess I won't say it. He was beaten by some guards. They usually take him outside where there are no witnesses. They made the mistake of attacking him in the hallway, so there were a couple of other inmate witnesses. Well, and he met me when we were both in the SHU, segregated housing, isolation, shuffled his papers back and forth through the chair man assigned to clean the chair. So, and I got very familiar with Boo and his case. They cracked a couple of ribs, so the medical reports reported that, and he had a couple of inmate witnesses. Well, he was, if you make it far enough in the process, and he did because I was helping him, at the last minute, the court, if you survive all the motions and the bullshit legalese crapola that the state will file against you, motions to dismiss, motions for summary judgment, et cetera, and most prisoners are lost in space, and the law library is clueless, I assure you, as anybody who's been in there knows. So if you make it that far, the court will appoint counsel. There's a list of voluntary attorneys, most of them pretty darn good. We've got a couple of excellent attorneys out of Wilmington, Delaware. They did a wonderful job. But they went down to interview these two inmate witnesses. You know, when Boo got these interrogatories asking for witnesses, he said, do you think I should list them? I say, darn right. You never know what they'll say. So you get them on the witness stand, put their names down. So first time the attorneys went down and interviewed these two inmates who had seen the brutal attack on Curtis, was his first name, they told the story, told them what actually happened. They went down to re-interview them about 3 or 4 weeks later. Very different. They're changing their stories. They're fidgeting. They're scared to death. They finally got the truth out of them. Some COs had come in their cell and said, man, if you testify, you'll never get out of here. We'll plant cocaine in your cell. We'll charge you with other charges. We'll make up all kinds of charges. You'll never get out of here. 25. Well, this alone is a federal crime, a serious federal crime. So these attorneys filed a motion under seal explaining all of this. How do I know this? Because I know, because Boo showed it to me. When he got a copy of the motion, it was under seal, so nobody would know about it. They filed this with the federal judge, asking her to report this to the United States Attorney's Office for investigation, this intimidation of the witnesses. Judge ignored it. I mean, this is just one example of thousands of what goes on. And they get away with it time after time after time because there's no accountability. The only accountability, the only effective remedy is to prosecute them and lock them up. Okay.
This whole thing is sounds so ludicrous that it's almost like a movie that you're watching that you
can't. It's worse than a bad movie. Neil, I'm there, you know, whoever was talking there, I was at Neil?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'd find it hard to believe if I hadn't actually seen it. All of it. I'd find it hard to believe. In our little great country, this is going on. Not only is it going on, it's going on wholesale. And being ignored by these officials. You know, when they did what they did to me, and by the way, it's not about what they did to me. It's about what they do to relatively helpless people, most of them black and poor, day after day after day after day, and get away with it. I wrote to people I know who used to be attorney general, high and mighty people, Joe Biden, you know, the state, people who used to be attorney general, other good lawyers, the U.S. attorney, the FBI, the head of the state police, all of them ignored it. They just ignored it. It's nothing short of astonishing, just astonishing. We need to turn it around somehow. And the only way to do it is to get some successful prosecution. And again, it's the black population being decimated. And the bottom line is the wholesale effect of all the injustice, whether, you know, it's the guy getting a life sentences for three minor charges, which happens, all the three strikes laws, they're finally starting to see that those do make no sense. There's an excellent article on our website about that. About the three strikes laws. Well, people see this, it undermines and erodes confidence in the system and respect for law enforcement across the board. Across the board. Is it fair? No, it's not fair. More millions and millions of people can see that it's not fair. So why should they trust the courts? Why should they trust the cops? They don't. And it's understandable. And it's a damn shame. I'm so old, I remember when the system worked well. And believe it or not, it did. When I was practicing law, justice almost always was the result. Today, injustice is the result far, far too much of the time. By the way, when I was practicing, I was in court. I'm a veteran of over. I never kept an exact count, although I can tell you how many I lost. I did lose a couple, too. But of over 400 jury trials and over 100 non-jury trials, I was in court in trial. You know, 4 out of 5 days of the week. Today, you know, somebody asked me the other day what I want to practice law. Well, I have no desire to practice law full time. I'm not making any money, but I'm doing what I want to do, helping people and putting my background, my experiences, good and bad, to good use. But when I want to practice law today, I don't think so. Today, 95% of all felonies end in a plea. And, of course, that's due to stacking charges. I'll touch on that in a minute, which is a direct violation of the ABA code of conduct, the ethical standards for lawyers. They pile up. Think about it. You read these charges in the newspaper, so-and-so. You'll never, well, once in a blue moon, you'll see them charged with one offense or two. Usually, they throw everything they can think of on there. You know, person will have 6 or 8 charges. Why? Because in the mid-90s, most states passed what they call truth in sentencing laws, which required that if you get convicted of more than one crime, sentence must be consecutive, back-to-back, can't be concurrent. So you're looking at so many years, you're scared to death. This pressures most people into pleading guilty. 95% of all felonies end in a guilty plea. I wrote an essay called Rush to Sentence. It's on our website. 20 minutes, you're done. You're scared to death. You don't know what you're doing. Good luck trying to undo that plea, by the way. It's damn near impossible because the judge asks you, do you understand? You waive this right, you waive that right, blah, blah, blah. And once you say yes on the record, you're done. No matter what happens afterwards, all the judges do is point to that called a plea colloquy, the transcript of the day you were in court and pled guilty. And you see, you did it. You said yes. You realized you were giving up these rights. Good luck trying to get out of it or withdraw your plea.
Ken, why don't we?
So the judge has relatively no knowledge about the, and in 95% of those cases, there's no pre-sentence investigation, by the way. When I was practicing, I spent plenty of time over in the on the defense as a prosecutor and as a defense attorney over with the, of course, I only had a couple of cases, I'm lucky to say. By the way, it's a lot easier keeping them out than it is getting them out once they're in there as a defense attorney. But I spent a lot of time with the pre-sentence investigator, giving them the background, discussing the case, suggesting, you know, what would be a fair sentence, most of it as a prosecutor. Today, most cases don't even have a pre-sentence investigation, so the judge is sentencing in the dark. It's no wonder that we have wildly disparate sentences. One guy with the same background in terms of criminal offenses, same age, same disposition, same crimes, gets probation. The next guy gets 20 years. You know, it's just nuts.
What the heck is wrong? Let me see. What the hell is going on with the judges, for crying out loud? You know, this is happening all over. I mean, in my community, your community, all over the country. It's almost like they have no business being a judge. They're all idiots, and they're all in this political game.
They worked before. They make about 180 grand a year. They have all the state benefits in Delaware. They retire with three-quarters pay for life when they retire, and they have a vested interest in keeping the system going. Now, most judges today will admit and realize that these mandatory minimums are not good. They're a disaster, and sentencing discretion should be passed on to the judges. That alone isn't going to make a whole huge difference until we stop arresting people for crimes we shouldn't be arresting them for. I'm talking about the nonviolent addicts and the mentally ill. This is a health problem. It's got nothing to do. Should never be in the criminal justice system. You know, I was at a meeting. I haven't been to many meetings lately for about the last 3 or 4 months, but for the better part of the 4 years since I've been out, I go to a meeting about once a month, keep my face in front of various officials so they know I'm not going away. I was at a meeting when our attorney general was running for attorney general, Matt Dan, and somebody asked him, you know, what are you for legalization of marijuana? And he said, well, I think we should still have, I'm for decriminalizing it, but we should still have a penalty so the kids know that it's wrong, that it's not good to smoke marijuana. Well, again, he's wrong. So I gave him a note after the meeting, which he assured me he read. He told me he reads everything I send him, the emails. Obviously, he does, because now he's quoted some of them, although he doesn't attribute it to me. So they got no business in the criminal justice system at all. At all. No penalty, no fines. It's a health problem. It's a health problem, not a criminal problem.
And let me ask you a quick question. What, yeah. You know, here, like, for instance, like when you're talking about the marijuana situation, you know, and, well, I think it's good, but I'm not going to, you know, I think we ought to just leave it like it is. Let me ask you a question. What in the hell are the states allowing a worse drug in alcohol?
Oh, yeah. Alcohol is by far, any, you look at any of the numbers in terms of lives destroyed, cost to society, insurance costs, et cetera, alcohol is the worst drug by far. Nevertheless, we need more advertising about the dangers to alcohol. Here's the answer. Advertising. You know, we need treatment for those already hooked, alcoholics and other drug addicts. We need treatment for those already in the grip of this powerfully pernicious poisons. And we need advertising to warn those who, you know, what does just say no tell you? Not a damn thing. Nothing.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, what does an egg in a frying pan tell you? Nothing. The Montana Meth Project was active. It's since been taken over by drugfree.org out of New York. It was a real active ad campaign targeted at youngsters between 18 and 30 in several states. A dot-com billionaire lost his daughter to methamphetamine, so he started the initial project. Radio, TV, print ads. That you can, real people telling their real stories. Hi, like a radio spot might be, hi, my name is Susie. I've got spots all over my face and body. I've lost 4 or 5 teeth. I've been raped twice. I was in prison for 9 months, all because I started smoking methamphetamine 2 years ago. You can hear in the anguish in her voice, you don't want to touch that crap. Part of it is real people telling their real stories, and another part of the ad campaign is explaining how drugs work on your brain. I'd like to think if I knew how cocaine works on your brain, I never would have touched this stuff. We'll never know. But the bottom line is, you're gone. As you know, I've talked to a lot of people, read lots of articles. The psychoforensic evaluator for the public defender's office in the state of Delaware, he's the guy who interviews all the drug clients. Probably has more knowledge and practical experience with these people and these issues than anybody else on the planet. In every state, his or her counterpart. And he said, well, basically, the drugs hijack your brain. And they do. All they do is make you want more. I'm talking about the powerful opiates, the narcotics. All right. they do is make you want more. But advertising works. I mean, look, so that's the answer. We take a tiny fraction, 10% of what we're wasting now on the so-called war on drugs and put it toward advertising, you'll see a huge decline in crimes, means victims, fewer victims. You'll see a huge decline in addicts. You'll see a huge decline in arrests, huge decline in prison populations, et cetera, et cetera. Look at cigarettes. The fact is, you know, the cigarette companies lied to us for years. So they were finally forced to spend billions of dollars on advertising. And it worked. Between 2002 and 2012, the percentage of teenagers between 12 and 17 who started to smoke was cut in half. Cut in half. Why? Because they see the advertising, you know, skull and crossbones on the package, et cetera, et cetera. Effective advertising is the best alternative. But this criminalization of it, locking people up, destroying families, is and giving people a criminal record. I mean, good God, try to get a job coming out of prison. It's another issue, reentry, and the lack of successful reentry programs. It's all a chaotic, cataclysmic disaster. How unjust is the criminal justice system? It's unjust even when you think you're done with it and you've paid your dues and you come out. Good luck trying to get a job.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, I mean, and you're absolutely right. I totally agree with you. You know, and what few ads we do see about people who have been on some kind of drug that's, you know, taken out their teeth or, you know, messed up their face, whatever it might be. It doesn't matter. They're so few and far between. And then the media, no matter what it is, whether it's magazines, TV, radio, doesn't matter. They have to fill their pockets so much that these companies that are self-sufficient as far as making money, can't afford to do it.
I'm not sure I follow your question there.
Well, my point is, example, the help that people need.
And they've got these so-called programs. Let me tell you, so-called treatment programs, total joke. These companies put together what looks good on paper. It is. I've seen them. I've been in them. I've seen them in prison. For all three or four of them that are offered in the state of Delaware. It's the same across the country. I get calls and emails from people, friends and family, every day. Every day. It's a joke. They put together a good program on paper. They get the contract for $13 million or $20 million or whatever to go in and provide all this so-called treatment. And I say so-called because it's a total joke. The difference between what's on the paper and what actually goes on in the prisons makes, as I said before, and I'll say it again, makes the Grand Canyon look like a crack in the sidewalk. Because there's no monitoring, there's no accountability, there's no control. It's just as wild and crazy as the whole prison system, as the crime by the COs. The program I was in, it's improved slightly since then. It was called Green Tree. The prisoners, you never saw a counselor in the building. The counselor was in the building. There's about 100 people in this so-called treatment program. He was in the building for about 3 or 4 hours a week to process people in and out. The prisoners made all the decisions. Think about this. The prisoners decided who would complete what class, and therefore who would complete the program. Now, if you had a sentence, like mine was, about 5 years suspended for completion of the program, I pled guilty to one count of felony theft, which I was guilty of. I got the maximum, 5 years, first offense in 60-some years, you know, it was just crazy, But the expectation was you do this program, complete the program, you go home. So everybody expected I'd be home in about a year. Well, God guards figured out quite easily how to trigger the five-year sentence by getting me out of the program, by making up totally erroneous, false criminal accusations against me. But the inmates, so the inmates, in effect, determine when you go home. If you've got a sentence, as most of them are, suspended for completion of the program. Typically, for drug crimes or related crimes, the judge would give you a burglary if the judge knows you're an addict or that comes to light. Oh, by the way, virtually all, depending what study you read, 84% to 92% of all crime is drug-related. And it's because of the war on drugs and the prohibition of drugs. You know, alcohol didn't create Al Capone. Prohibition created Al Capone. And the same is true with all these other crimes. With property crimes, 95% or more is drug-related. People lying, stealing, cheating, stealing to buy more stuff, to get more drugs, you know, get to sell stuff to get drugs, stealing money, forging checks, you name it. Okay, so The prisoners determine who's going to get out, what and when. So you can imagine the chaos and the bribery and the threats and all the crapola going on in the so-called treatment program. Never mind that there wasn't any treatment. It was just a joke. Just a pathetic three-ring circus. So you know, there's
it's not going to get any better.
And boy, you don't want to get me started there, the mentally ill. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's all right. I just said it. And the way things are going right now, is that it's not going to get any better. If anything, it's going to get worse. And, I'm saying that because we're not doing anything to do what you're suggesting,
Well, we are in small steps. You know, you read recently the federal government, and by the way, this is only the federal prisons, which are about 15% of the general prison population, about 85% of the whole system, and all the prisoners are through the state system, state courts, and they're in state prisons. But they're releasing about 6,000 people, reducing their sentences as they should be because they were stupidly long in the first place, so that they can be released. Nonviolent drug offenders, mostly. 6,000. That's a drop in the bucket. In the federal system alone, there are at least 100,000, as sure as I'm standing here, at least 100,000. In the state systems across the country, there are hundreds of thousands in the same shoes who should be getting the same kind of treatment. So we're seeing these things change slowly, also painfully slowly. And they will eventually, because as more people learn the facts, and they're going to, and they're starting to, the system will have no alternative. But as I said, make no mistake about it, there are powerful influences lobbying against any kind of constructive change. Look at medical marijuana. You've got not only the prisoners, the CEOs' unions lobbying against it, the police unions lobbying against it. You can imagine big pharma, drug companies lobby against it. Why? Because they'll lose customers to medical marijuana. So a lot of money interest. These are the people who pay, lobby the legislatures, line their pockets, take them out to lunch, buy them gifts, so they won't vote for change, the change that's needed. But it's coming slowly.
I'm going to tell you what, Ken, because we are running short of time. I'm telling you what, you've only touched the surface tonight from what it sounds like. And, this is concerning to me because people are so ignorant to what you are talking about and what's going on in the criminal system.
It's a shame. It's a shame. And just as big a problem as the war on drugs, as the war on poor people. The total disconnect between enforcement is totally detached from community safety. We're imprisoning people over and over again for parking tickets or drinking a beer in public. Why? I read an article not too long ago. The guy's been in and out, gone to prison 3 or 4 times because he violated probation each time because he didn't have the money to pay the fine for drinking a beer in public. What if this is not only costing taxpayers $36,000 a year to lock them up, it's costing all the whole processing of him through the system, you name it, et cetera, et cetera. And it's diverting police resources, all this crapola. And by crapola, I mean prosecuting the mentally ill and the addicts is a tremendous diversion of police resources. I've stated this fact several times. I'll state it one more time. The percentage of solved murders has dropped from the early to mid-70s, 95 to 94% of all murders were solved. Today, it's down to about 46 or 47% of murders are solved. Rape, same situation, same thing. Rapes, 92 to 93% of all rapes were solved in the early to mid-70s. Today, it's down around 41 or 42%. Why? Because the police are too busy locking people up for having a joint in their pocket. They need to be prosecuting serious crimes, locking up people who are a danger to the community. Look at these shootings. The percentage of those that are solved is minuscule. It's just crazy.
Okay, let me ask you this real quick, because this is serious. When an officer stops somebody for whatever, I don't care if it's racial profiling or whether it's just because their car isn't what it should looks like it should be, and they end up finding out that they think they smell marijuana or pot. And I'm going to ask you a direct question: if you have any evidence of that, when that person is pulled out of the car, that the police have been so corrupt to actually plant something in the vehicle to
Oh, they do it all the time. There's an article on our website about this. I think it was New York City cops talking about planting evidence. They'll plant guns. They'll plant drugs. They do it for lots of reasons, to cover their ass when they do something wrong, and just to boost their arrest numbers, boost the numbers. Yeah, a lot of these police agencies get money from the federal government depending on the numbers of arrests, et cetera, et cetera. So they have an incentive to meet quotas and boost the numbers, and plenty of it is fabricated. Yep, no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it.
Well, the thing of it is, you know, we hear so much and we see so much about the police brutality anyway. I know we've gotten a little bit away from the prison what we've been talking about, but
yep.
they end up in prison because of that police brutality.
Yep, that's right. The whole system's upside down.
It really is. And Ken, I got to tell you something. Before we've got just a couple of minutes left anyway. I want you to give out your website again. And your phone number so that people can contact you, because I'm sure people are out there listening, either know someone, has a family member.
Yep. You know, by the way, several courts in a couple of states, the highest court, Massachusetts was one of them, have ruled that the odor of marijuana is no longer justification to search a car because of the legality of medical marijuana in those states. And this
is
the same thing. We'll see the same thing eventually out of the U.S. Supreme Court. You know, so many arrests are based on, I smell marijuana or the residue of marijuana. Bullshit. Pardon me. Okay. The website is www.citizensforcriminaljustice.net. www.citizensforcriminaljustice.net. Facebook group is Citizens for Criminal Justice, with justice all in capital letters. My phone number is 302-423-4067.
I'm going to make a comment too, Ken. First of all, for those of you that are listening or those that have missed the show tonight for any reason, the podcast will be up on americantruthfinders.com on the archives probably by sometimes Tuesday, or on BBS Radio under American Truth Finders. You can just go to it and hear the podcast, and I will be posting it so that if anybody wants to hear it again, which I think would be a great idea, then you'll be able to do so. And of course, it's going to be, you know, the show is on so many different sites, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Ken, but I wanted to get this information out because I think this show that you just have been doing is so darned important.
The only thing you can do that is effective these days is to write a letter to the editor. The next time you see an article about any kind of crazy injustice, write a letter to the editor in your newspaper. Google the letters to the editor email address for the 10 largest newspapers in your state, send it to yourself and send them a blind carbon copy, and send it to 3 or 4 major national newspapers like the Chicago Tribune, the Washington Post, the New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer. They print a fair number of them. In Delaware, small state, the downstate papers print a lot of my letters. The upstate papers, the big paper upstate, not so much because I'm too critical of the system. They don't like it. But millions of people read these letters, and that's the best way to call attention to the problem. That's what we need to do before we can finally get people to take action. And when you see a problem, contact the United States Attorney in your jurisdiction. Get their email address. Send them an email about it. Why aren't you prosecuting this policeman or this corrections officer? They get enough such emails, they might actually do something someday.
Well, you know, I think what you're saying, it makes sense. The problem is you get this damn form letter back from one of our congressmen.
Oh, I know. I've seen hundreds of them. And unfortunately, the only agency or group that will tackle it is the ACLU. But they don't have the resources to do much. I mean, they send out hundreds of form letters every day to inmates who complain about their brutality or the neglect of medical care. Sorry, we can't help you. Because they don't have the resources. They do not have the resources. But bombard these people with emails. I'll put the problem in their lap. I'll try to get them to act. That's all we can do for now.
I think your cause is fantastic. And in fact, I do get your
your
letters to the editor.
I wrote the article of why prison abuse is bad, bad policy. Yet it is. I mean, these prisoners see these guards getting away with crimes day after day after day. They get frustrated and angry, and they come out with a deep, deep hatred of law enforcement. It's total backfire. They're worse than when they went in. So many of them, and those who weren't are. They see the craziness and the unfairness of it, the injustice of it, and nobody doing anything about it. They get damn frustrated and furious, as well they should be. But call attention to it and write them about it, write to the U.S. attorney, and write letters to the editor. Yeah. You know, our attorney general, Matt Dehn, created the new office of, civil rights and public affairs or some such thing, to prosecute cops. An independent prosecutor with independent investigators, well, that's a joke too, you know, half of these, the so-called independent investigators are former cops. But anyway, so the new Office of Civil Rights, ostensibly to go after bad cops. He did this about a year ago. So I asked the lady, the Deputy Attorney General in charge of it, about a year ago at one of the early meetings, well, what are you going to do about prison abuse? Are you finally going to start prosecuting these COs? I mean, look at the civil lawsuits in federal court filed by a few good lawyers who take them when the person's killed or beaten half to death. It tells the story. They're out of control in there. Are you finally going to prosecute them? And she said, well, I think we'll leave that to some other agency. What other agency? There's nobody else doing anything about it. You're the person charged with enforcing the law. You're the person who should be prosecuting these people. Nobody wants to address the terrible, terrible, America's dirty little secret, huge secret, prison abuse. It's outrageous. Outrageous.
Okay. Ken? I really wish we didn't have to leave the show and get you off. But I tell you what, by tomorrow morning, I'm going to have a post about how great the show was. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
Hey, buddy, I'll tell you what. And go to AmericanTruthFinders.com for the archives of the show, or BBSRadio.com and listen to the show on BBS Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Neil Douglas. Along, my guest tonight was Kenneth Abraham, or Ken Abraham. I want to thank you. Have a great night and have a great week, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.